Welcome to Sister Brunch, everybody.
Thanks for being here. I'm so glad to see you, Anya.
Nice to see you,
Fashion. We have an amazing, freaking amazing guest today.
She's freaking amazing.
I know, she really, really is. Kadi Kamakate, she's here with us today. She's an award-winning producer based in LA. She's worked with brands such as Google, Amazon, and 20th Century Fox.
That's cool. That's cool.
Very good.
I also heard she's the co-creator and producer of Leimert Park, which is where I almost lived when I moved here, and it's a beautiful spot. So it's a comedic series that follows three black female roommates and friends as they navigate life, love, and careers in the vibrant and rapidly gentrifying South LA neighborhood. It's executive produced by Macro, and Leimert Park was an official selection at the 2018 Sundance Film Festival.
I will say that I watched you all on Instagram when you were at the Sundance Festival, and very jealous because it looked amazing.
It was awesome.
It was so hot, our condo burned down.
What?
Wait. I don't know what you mean.
It literally caught on fire.
What?
Did you say it was so hot?
No, I'm just kind of, you know.
It was fire. You guys were fire.
There was like basically the condo next door burnt. Somebody fell asleep with a candle. Like the quintessential, God. Like don't fall asleep with a candle. Somebody fell asleep with a candle because Sundance rage. But it was wonderful. I had been there before to produce parties for an employer I had a couple years back. But it was my first time with a project and a project I was extremely passionate about. So to me, I feel extremely blessed to have had that experience.
For so many filmmakers, going to that festival is like the pinnacle. Yeah. How do you even start that journey?
Well, you don't start that journey thinking of it. I think oftentimes if that clouds your decision-making process, you're not going to make anything that's going to land anywhere. We were just three women. It was myself, Mel Jones, and Davita Scarlett that just were trying to create in a space where that I'm very comfortable in now, which is digital media, at the time where we were seeing Awkward Black Girl and all these shows and creators that are just like, we're not going to wait for it. We're going to put our content out there. So we also were like, what can we do? And we started ideating. A lot of it is extrapolated from Mel's life. And originally, a lot of the characters, the archetypes were friends of ours and some of ourselves as well. And it's evolved and changed. But yeah, it was about creating visuals that we yearn for, crave for, and we don't see. So I think it was just straight from the heart, and we were just fortunate that we had champions along the way that resonated to it and we were able to make it.
Let's step a little even further back. What was that original kind of spark for you that was like, this is the thing that I want to do?
So I'm originally born in Côte d'Ivoire. I was born there and lived there till I was about nine. My mom is originally from Wisconsin. My dad is not. He's from Ivory Coast, and they met in college and ended up relocating there. And so I was born there. My brothers were.
Do you speak another language?
Yes, je parle français.
I
wish I spoke actually my ethnic language, which I don't, which I'm super upset my father about. But
can I ask, was part of your parents' reasoning for taking you there because they wanted you to have kind of access to that heritage? Or was that not something they thought of and then you got that anyway?
You know, that's super interesting. I thought for a long time it was my father trying to kind of repatriate and like, you know, a lot of times men of this generation went abroad, were educated, came back. But it turned out it was my mom who was just like, you know, they were in their mid-30s and I guess they were in Berkeley at the time. And she was like, if we're ever going to do it, it's going to be now. Wow. I don't think she thought it was going to be 20 years of her life. I think she thought it might be like 3 to 5 years. But, you know, they're not planners, which is why I'm a producer.
He's like, I need structure in my life.
There's a clear line here. But yeah, so I feel super fortunate about that, of just having an experience of living abroad in general and having another culture to pull inspiration from. But I come from, as many people know, a lot of West African traditions are huge in storytelling.
Yes.
So I definitely come from just always being around storytelling that were, you know, it's like they were so visual in their description and in their richness that I was always seeing things. And my dad is a film nerd. And when he was originally out in the States, was trying to be a screenwriter. I've not read a single script, so I don't know if he's any good. And he refuses. I always say, I'm going to produce something for you, and he doesn't want it. But I was just around a household that also reinforced kind of filmmaking and a love for it. And so I think when I was younger, I thought I was going to be an actress because that's what you see. you don't know about the nuts and bolts behind it. And then I thought I was going to be a director. And then I got to film school. And I realized then pretty quickly that my mind worked in organizational kind of spaces. And knowing from a very young age that I always wanted to be in the film industry, and I've never had a backup plan, it just was more about figuring out how I fit in. And so it was in college that I AD'd for a while, then produced and realized that that's my bread and butter.
And speaking of bread and butter, that's kind of a question we get a lot, and I think we all grapple with, is you don't make money right away, right? You kind of like, you want, or even ever possibly, right?
Never,
if you're doing
indie
stuff, right? Yeah. So what were the pressures you felt around that, around making money right away? And how did you survive, you know, the early part when you didn't have a job, but you knew this is what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I started interning at Film Independent my last year of college. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate, and I think it's important to share that my parents helped me for the first year out. Mm. I think a lot of people don't talk about that, but I wouldn't have made it without that couple hundred dollars a month.
Yeah.
I was working two jobs as well and then freelancing as much as possible. So yeah, I was grinding. I was not, and I still am not, below doing anything I need to do to get the job done. I would work on music video sets. I would AD whoever would let me AD. And Cody Elaine Oliver, she is one of the creators of Black Love, that's super successful right now. So she gave me a shot being her intern, and it's through her I met Mel Jones, Angel Christie Williams. I met basically my like diehards out here that I've kind of like come up with and have been working with, and they gave me chances to be on set with them and to grow. And you know, you have to have the homies that are like, well, you're not really a production manager by like experience, but we're gonna give you that title and that responsibility, and you're gonna figure it out.
Yes.
You know, like you have to have these doors open for you.
Right, but you have to be, you have to also prove yourself as somebody
for sure
who could take the challenge and work themselves to the bone and all of those other elements that I think sometimes people don't realize. It's like you get great opportunities in production, but you get it because you were the PA for the last seven months.
You can't fake the funk on production.
Yeah, you cannot. Right. No. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times younger folks coming in here are like, well, I'm making movies with my iPhone and I understand how to gaff something or to DP. But it's not just about having the skill. It's about knowing the people and understanding the environment.
And, emotional intelligence.
Yes, 100%.
Anybody that tells me like what is my biggest skill set as a producer is being emotionally intelligent, because oftentimes a lot of decisions are being made like, are people fed well?
Yeah.
People have caffeine.
And what are they fed?
Yeah, what are they fed? Mm-hmm. And like, what is the actual power struggle that's happening behind this decision that like we're not tangibly seeing, right? And those just happen with being experienced on set. Sometimes when I work with people that are greener, I realize that's the difference. Like, they can't make those discernments, and that's actually the difference between something that's very fluid and successful and something that has, like, a bunch of kings all the way throughout.
Right. Mm. Yeah. Sometimes you have to understand, like, let that person be king. You'll be king next time.
Yeah.
It's all good. Can I just say something about emotional intelligence? Because as a director, I feel like that's something that I have to key into all the time. Yes. And I think people don't I'm so glad you brought it up, because I think people don't recognize that enough, how important it is to be able to understand people.
Yeah.
You know, it helps you code switch in all these different situations. And I mean, as
being not.
Or not. Yeah, or not.
Or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Will you take us through two different daytime scenarios, a day in the life of Kati as a producer? One would be on set. Well, let's go with like pre-production. Like, what kinds of things would you do in pre-production as a producer? And then the other would be on set. One day on a set, what would those look like?
Oh, wow. It's really not sexy.
As a producer on set.
As a producer.
Okay.
Yep.
So I think in prep for me, I consider myself as the ship. Like, I'm not the captain, but I carry everybody and we make it. I'm regularly calling and having conversation with every stakeholder, from the DP to the director, often having conversations with the editor simultaneously. Because what I think often happens is if there's a break in communication and somebody doesn't get a piece of information that you might have deemed trivial but could have been important to their process or whatever, somebody's upset. And that upset turns into something that didn't need to happen. So I'm constantly having conversation, making sure that whatever our director wants is being clearly communicated to those people, whether it's setting up calls with our director, whether it's me relaying that, making sure we're always updating the budget based on those changes or those developments or, you know, the new learnings, our production designer. We built a prank car for a Stephen Curry video. Like, I've never built a car before. I don't know what those numbers look like. And nor did my production designer. So that's like a challenge. Like, how do you build a car? What do you need a car? Like, no day is the same. You're always answering a bunch of different questions. But it's about having those conversations throughout the day. Also, the hard line of meeting your schedule. Like, are you not having, you know, are those conversations taking too long? And then also answering to my higher ups that want kind of the headline of what's happening. So synthesizing all the progress and all the steps ahead rather quickly in terms of also creative budget and timeline to the people that, you know, cut the checks. So yeah, it's a lot of conversations and a lot of emails, a lot of texting.
But also, would you say it's a lot? I feel like really good producers are also like asking questions about things that are going to happen. Like, they're really, it's the conversations aren't, it's not just updating. It's like, look, in 4 weeks, we're going to be here. Yeah. How are we managing that and really pulling people forward?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's okay, we're building a car. How are we getting it there?
Yeah.
Oh, after we're done with it, what do we need to do with it?
Exactly.
Yes. Like, are we destroying it? Are we selling it? Can we sell it and make some money on our pro? Okay, how do we sell it? Who has the deed of this car? Like, how do we transfer the deed? Like, you're having those questions. And sometimes, you know, I think what can stall people, and I think what really freaked me out in the beginning is not having the answer. But the focus is the question.
Yeah.
And I would even get freaked out. I was like, but if I don't know, how do I even know the questions to ask? And, like, that is an area I say don't worry about, because usually
it'll come.
It will come. And if it doesn't, that's the learning.
Yeah.
Like, that's the moment that you learn in. So I definitely don't operate from I know everything. I try to work with people who also don't operate in that way, because I think being curious is interesting.
It's really important.
It's what we need. Yeah, I'm not a monitor producer. I actually don't really enjoy staying close. Which I'm learning.
What does that mean, monitor producer?
I don't like sitting on a chair staring at the monitor.
Is that where the director is and everything?
Yeah.
Is that place?
Yeah. Okay. It just makes me so nervous.
Okay.
Like, I know there's a lot of producers that just are like, I have my team, my team's running everything, I can just sit here and they'll just come to me. I don't know. Something feels very weird to me. Like, I need to walk around and talk to people. I talk, you know, like, I talk to the PAs. Like, how are you doing? Are you eating? Like, are you feeling good? Like, you know, I talk to everybody, just making sure, you know, I have a talk before we shoot with everybody, reminding everybody that we can communicate, we can resolve conflicts, we can respect each other, and our goal is to make a video. We are not doing heart surgery.
I love this. Because, I mean, I think having been an actor on sets, like, There is that pressure of kind of like when they say rolling, like, it's all on you. I like that I could see somebody there who's like kind of not just sitting there at a chair,
focus
but
on
actually,
you.
I like
to be accessible.
Where did you learn that? Because that is something that's said in the industry, that it's not brain surgery. Where did that become like embedded in you, as in like that's not how I'm gonna lead? Because there are some people that definitely are like, everything's on fire, we gotta go.
I mean, I haven't produced Game of Thrones, like, I feel like there are very few times that I take myself seriously. You know, like, like, the bottom line of what we're doing is content, and literally, if something goes terribly wrong, it's fine.
Right,
like, nobody's
right.
life
it's
is
not the end of the world.
On the line.
I know. So. I'm putting my hand up because I have a question.
Oh, I thought you were telling us
me.
To be quiet. That's
fine. I have a question. So when you talk about this not being rocket science and you not taking yourself too seriously, I definitely get that. But given how hard you've had to work to get there, and as a black woman, as a woman of color, how do you keep yourself level when in such a competitive industry?
Yeah, that's very interesting, because often not only being a woman, being a black woman, and also I've noticed being a short woman.
Shorties.
I just put that together earlier. So I was like, there is some short bias going on
here. For sure.
Most situations where I'm realizing those kinds of thoughts are working against me or whatnot, I become aware of it, is not often in overt situations. It's more just kind of very passive, kind of institutionalized situations of like why you don't get selected for that position or that project and stuff like that. Often I meet people, I think, with reason. I never match high energy with high energy because that just, like, explodes, right? Oh, so wow. To me, I've had people kind of really come at me and we're just going to talk reason. I had a production designer once that was went off on somebody on my team and was extremely upset because the dumpster we had gotten for the production was not enough. Mind you, my team had, like, sent dumpster images to him, got a backup dumpster for him. Cool. He never, like, confirmed any of these things. So basically, we got him two dumpsters that were bigger than the one he wanted us to get. So really, his problems should have never occurred.
Right.
Right.
But he was upset at us because of this. So I pulled him aside and I just was like, well, you know, we got you two dumpsters. You only requested one. We got you one that was significantly larger than the one that you said, so I don't really see what the problem is. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of looked at me and, like, huffed and puffed and walked away and then came back. He was like, you know, I'm really sorry. And he's a guy that doesn't really apologize. And he's like, I'm very, very sorry about this. You know, I really needed some coffee. And
I was angry.
So right. Like, I can't carry it because I wouldn't be in this business at this point. Right. You know, like, you can't carry everybody's BS about it. But, you know, he recognized in that moment that, hey, like, you were wrong. Like, you were flat out wrong. We tried to get ahead of this issue. Mm-hmm. You created a bigger issue, and then you have the nerve to be upset about people that try to solve, like, that kind of sense. So I just kind of don't take it personally. I really meet people with rationale. I'm very transparent about money. I don't like being somebody that's like, we'll figure it out after.
No.
I think money is, like, very fundamental. Like, we're not in here for volunteering. Mm. So I try to get ahead of a lot of conflict by being clear about it. But
I think one of the things you said really circles back to what you were talking about earlier is that, and you like to do this, is prep. Mm-hmm. You were prepared. In fact, you were over-prepared.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in doing all of that work prior to shooting, you were full-on buffered and supported by your own work.
Yeah.
So we know you love listening to this podcast and to our amazing guests, but you can also join our community. You can join us on Twitter at Sister Brunch and also on Instagram at Sister Brunch Podcast. Now back to our interview. To a certain extent, the reason for this podcast is we do take some shit personally, meaning, like, the reason this is Sister Brunch, right, is that we understand that we have some barriers in the industry.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, like, especially as a Black woman and right, like, even the size now, the question of that, like, in what ways do you see, and whatever you're comfortable sharing? I mean, because to me, I'm looking at Leimert Park and I'm like, I don't understand why we're not watching this show. And I'm curious if the fact that it stars Black women, you know, in a gentrifying neighborhood, that, like,
speaking of one Black show.
Right. And speaking of gentrifying Leimert Park, too, is like, it's the white folks in Hollywood that are gentrifying Leimert Park.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, like, I guess,
what
kinds of things do you see kind of pushing back against you?
You know, I think at the end of the day, there are certain roles that people feel comfortable with you in. And certain imagery people are comfortable with you in.
Enslavement.
And, yes.
Crime.
Pleasure and to name autonomy and all those kind of things. Yeah, like, not so great. I don't know. It's so interesting. I think, to me, this was never a choice of a career. Like, it was what I was supposed to do. So it doesn't feel like I'm ever not odd. You know, I'm, like, not odd in it. I feel so comfortable in it that I think sometimes when we have these moments that I'm feeling very dismissed because of my race or my gender, I'm just like, well, what the, like, who are you?
That's on you, right?
Like, who are you? Like, I've done
so
my work.
Good.
I've done here. Like, I belong here. Mm. I've never felt that I didn't belong at the table.
That feels like something you have to have in your mind is
absolutely
that you belong at the table. Because
period.
If you think you don't belong at the table, you're not going to get anywhere because no one's going to invite you to the table.
Right.
No. And then be so good, they know they're not having a table
exactly.
unless you're invited.
Yes, it's such a good point. Yeah.
I think that's actually an important thing to talk about is, like, if we're holding the shroud of, like, defensiveness because we're this person, we're also, like, pulling ourselves away from the table because already it's like, you know, you don't want to put that in the forefront. What you want to put in the forefront of what you do is your preparedness, is your hardworking, is your ingenuity, is your creativity, is your excitement for the job, which sounds like all of the things that you have.
This is what is beautiful and also so hard about doing this podcast is, like, given the folks that I work with, and I don't mean my immediate people, I'm just, you know, when I talk to you all, I'm like, y'all are some badasses, which means, and as much work as both of you are doing, and it's beautiful, like, you should be doing it all. And yet I completely agree that also, like, you just do the work. You still just wake up every morning, you go do the work, yeah, right? Like, you do it and you do it the best, you know, which we always do. That's what I'm dedicated to in the industry. Like, and I'm lucky to be in that position, mm-hmm, to be able to kind of like help move the story along, yeah, or, you know, but that's for me. But meantime, y'all do your work, and I'm gonna be in the offices being like, why aren't these two?
But I think those two go together because, yeah, I find that there are some other folks in the industry that talk about inclusion and diversity, but then you walk on their set and it's 80%. Yep. Mm-hmm. White
because
male.
They can't find anyone.
Oh, which is really hard.
I'm sorry to find women of color in the industry. There really, there's none of
you
them.
Can't. Do it.
Like,
do
there's
it.
No one.
You know, on Juneteenth, I produced a series, a shoot with one of the top black athletes in America. My whole production team was black. All of them were women.
Yes.
Like, that's
Tell
intentional.
Us more.
You know what
more.
I mean?
Yes.
I feel like there's just so many people that talk about it.
Yep.
And then you go on their sets or you, like, work with them and you're like, why is your whole team white dudes?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like, they can't relate to anything. It's not even the woke white dude, you know?
Right.
Like,
right.
He ain't even got swag
not
to him.
Trying.
Like, it's not even interesting. So, to me, it's about championing those people. And I'm fortunate enough to work in an opportunity and work in an environment, frankly, that has allowed me to champion people. Because much like my folks gave me those titles, maybe before folks could say I was ready, but I was able to step into it, I see that as my job.
Yeah.
You know, like, you have to do those things for the silly branded shoots because then they have brand real.
Right.
Yes.
So then when, like,
yes,
Honda or Toyota or whatever comes to them, they're like, oh, you have that. It's just very frustrating. I've seen it in so many spaces. I used to work for a top advertising agency that was like, oh, such a toxic environment. But you would see how people would get boxed out of opportunities because they didn't, quote unquote, didn't have anything. But then you show up on that set with that whatever named DP who checked out. And it was their first AC with DP Ambitions running the whole thing, right? It's like all of these things where you have so many people of color that are talented that just don't get the chance. And that is extremely important for me. I was like, let me have my legacy be people that were able to eat, go on vacation, and buy presents for their family because I was able to, like, give them that opportunity in a tangible way.
I think that we all operate with that just on the underlying,
yes,
like, surface of us every day. Mm-hmm. And I think it's what motivates us. It pushes us forward. And we may not tap into it all the time, but when we do, it's an emotional thing because, honestly, I watched a trailer to Harriet. I started bawling. The fact that story is now something that is like a major, like,
did you hear that they were trying to cast Julia Roberts?
Yes.
No, they weren't.
Yes.
You're lying.
When he started shopping that script, this was in the 90s. In the 90s. It was in the 90s. But in the 90s, when he started shopping that script, one of the producers was like, why don't we get Julia Roberts?
I'm going to find it for you.
Is she the most ethnic?
Because that sounds like her and Scarlett Johansson.
And the thing is, like, you know what? I'm trying to excuse it that it was the 90s. That shit still goes down. Like, it's still, like, it would not be surprising.
I did not know that.
Hold on, I found it. Let me quote him.
Oh, my goodness.
The unnamed executive.
Oh, my goodness.
Who should be named, by the way.
Yes.
The script is fantastic. Let's get Julia Roberts to play Harriet Tubman. When someone pointed out that Roberts couldn't be Harriet, the executive responded, it was so long ago. No one's going to know the difference.
What advice would you give women who want to be in the industry?
There's a lot of power in no, and I think what I didn't say no, and I think you probably shouldn't when you're starting out. I said yes to everything.
Agree with that. I feel like yes.
Yeah.
You have to.
You have to say yes to everything.
When you're starting out. It's going to hurt you terribly.
Yeah, right. I'm just going to say, remember, I was an actor and I said yes to some shit that I'm like, please don't ever put that online. You know, so anyway, no, it's not that.
Not
I mean, I'm not talking
Never
porn.
Be an actor.
I'm just talking I'm sorry.
Fancy.
It's not my podcast today.
I do. I think that is actually throughout the whole industry.
Right.
When you're starting out, you're a PA and they're the most exploited bunch in terms of crew of, like, you know, hours they will work. work, yes, without meals, without sleep, without mm-hmm. all of these things, right? They're the like backbone of it. But so yes, in terms of variety of projects, in terms yes. of people you don't yes. know or whatnot. But now I no longer have the guilt in saying no, and I yeah. find strength Good. In that, and just saying, you know, I know what I can give you, and this isn't a lineup. Mm. It's not enough time, not enough money, not enough X, Y, Z, because I'm never going to take a project regardless of like the time or money that I'm just going to check, you know, just check off and check out.
Yes.
So I don't commit to anything without knowing I'm going to be 100% at it.
Tell us what you're doing, how we can support you,
yes,
how we everything. Can find you, where, and I know, and I, it's beautiful that you're like, I don't want my name out there, you know.
Yeah, but this is very odd.
We are going to give that to you because it's important to us that people know who you are and what you're doing. So
yeah, I've been working full time for a very long time in the branded space, and I'm looking for a next chapter of going freelance.
Ooh. Wow.
And nurturing and working with directors and filmmakers to put their visions out there and work on content that I'm excited about. For me, it's about the people in the story, and it could be a short doc, it could be digital branded piece, experimental. You know, I think my legacy needs to be the body of my work. I don't have any project I'm immediately working on right now that I can pump. But yeah, like hire your local Black production girl, give her that extra $50 a day rate if she actually is doing that work. Really connect with people, and if you have any cool, interesting stories, here to make
I
it
love
happen.
That.
Kati, this is for real. This has been beautiful. It's more than I think we could have thought we would get from our Sister Brunch guests, and I especially appreciate your inspiration and also you've made your work accessible to women who might be interested in it and don't know how to do it, but you're like in it, and so providing this expert voice. So we're so grateful.
Yeah, I have to say, like, as somebody who came up like within the production, like I was a trainee, so mm-hmm. I came up within the network system, to hear your process and what you've done and how you've kept yourself motivated and diversified yourself and kept yourself working is really impressive. And I think that's, you know, a lot of people that are not in Hollywood, that's going to be their, you know, their direction. That's how they're going to come up. And so hearing from you has been really important. And I'm really thankful that you shared with us today. So Aww. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to Sister Brunch. I'm Anya Adams.
And I'm Fanchen Cox.
Join us next time.
Hey there, this is Christabel Insiap-Wadi, the executive producer of Sister Brunch. You will have heard me weighing in on the conversation earlier with Kati Kamakate. I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday, so look out for it then, and be sure to subscribe and rate our show wherever you get your podcasts. Our producer is Brittany Turner. Visit our website, we're at sisterbrunch.com, and join our community of creators. We're on Twitter at sisterbrunch, on Instagram at sisterbrunchpodcast, and we're on Facebook at facebook.com/sisterbrunchpodcast. We'll see you next time.